So we're going to go ahead and do the infrastructure.
Do the infrastructure.
Okay. First order of the business, approval of previous committee meeting minutes, which have already been distributed.
So moved.
Second.
Commissioner Holt makes the motion. Commissioner Ramos makes the second. Is there any discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. First item is going to be land and water update. Mr. Cook, will you make your presentation?
Thank you, Commissioner Parker. Just a few notes right quick. The World Birdie Center at Llano Grande at Westlaco was opened to public in June of 06. This is the second state-owned and operated park dedicated to birding in Texas. They're going very well. We partnered, as you might recall, with the city of Westlaco to develop this site. We're making good progress there on several different areas associated with that park. The original 1933 CCC era portion of Indian Lodge out in the Davis Mountains has been restored, was opened to the public in July of 06, and we've recently had a grand opening event that was well attended by locals and elected officials, and went over very, very well.
Could we get some pictures of that, or do we have?
Absolutely. We can get them for you.
Yeah.
The Choke Canyon Callahan Unit State Park was reopened to the public on September the 1st, 2006, following emergency repairs to the water system there. The grand reopening of the San Jacinto Monument took place September the 7th of 06, following modifications to the elevator and monument shaft to get in compliance with the fire safety standards and mechanical needs there that we ran into problems with. And it was very well done. Our contractor there did a great job. Folks on staff in our infrastructure division really pulled off a good one there in a short period of time. In September 2005, Hurricane Rita damaged facilities at 11 of our sites, including 7 state parks, 1 fish hatchery, and 3 wildlife management areas. Our force account crews, our employees, our guys that do in and women that do repairs of these places, are completing repairs at Village Creek State Park and construction repairs at Martin Dyes Jr. and the Jasper Fish Hatchery are currently underway. Thanks.
And that, now, also, would you tell them also about CRAM and the hurricane?
I may have to get a little help on that, but I know CRAM, we're looking at possibility of a substantial donation and
if they know money?
Yeah, certainly. Thank you for the record. My name is Steve Liston, and I'll cover Hurricane Rita repairs in a little more detail in my briefing to follow, but CRAM is the only park currently that remains unopened to the public. All the other facilities that were affected by the hurricane have now had substantial repairs or things to happen to allow them to be in operation, or at least operating on a limited basis in some cases. So CRM is the only park at this point in time that remains unopened. We have some critical issues there regarding infrastructure, wastewater damage, the electrical system, and as soon as those things are addressed, we'll hopefully here in the near future be able to start reopening that facility to the public.
The question I just was asked, did we get any federal funds for any help?
Commissioner Holt, I think he is going to make that presentation to you.
Thank you.
So, are you finished?
Yes.
At this time, Mr. Steve Liston is going to make a presentation regarding several items. Item number 2, the bond program and capital project update. Number
for two.
Yes, sir. Thank you, Commissioner Parker. Good morning, Commissioners. Again, for the record, my name is Steve Whiston, Director of the Infrastructure Division. I would like to begin, as is usually our case, with an update on the general obligation bond program. Commissioners, if you recall, the beginning of each fiscal year, we established for ourselves a set expenditure goals based on our available resources, based on the number and scope and magnitude or complexity of the projects that are on board for that year, and do our best to try to meet that goal in terms of overall end-of-year expenditure. I'm pleased to report that the total year-end expenditure for last fiscal year, FY06, exceeded the goal that we set for ourselves. Our target expenditure was $20.6 million, and our actual spending at the end of August was $22 million. I share that information with you, not just to pat ourselves on the back, but really to emphasize that this is a real collaborative effort. This is not just infrastructure. This is an effort of all the resource divisions working together in project teams, working independently in some cases to expend money to continue to drill down our capital program. I believe part of our success in FY06 was because we had so many projects in the pipeline, so many projects that had been planned and designed in the previous year, and then going into 06, all those projects went into construction, and it's during construction phase that we spend the majority of those funds. So we had a successful year, in my opinion, in 06, and happy to report that result. With fewer infrastructure staff available to us this current fiscal year, and with our inability to kick off as many projects, our projection, our goal that we set for 07 is going to be a little bit less. As reflected in this slide, we're proposing or estimating or projecting a year-end expenditure in 07 of about $19 million. We are off to a good start, however. Since September, we've expended a little over $2.4 million, which is tracking pretty closely. If you'll notice, the blue line as it overlays the yellow anticipated expenditure curve for this year. So we're off to a reasonable start. This is a reminder, and I'm sure as you all well know, the legislature has approved in Prop 8 funding about 54.8 million dollars for that original $100 million plus authority that was provided us in 2001. We received $36.7 million in January of 2003, and then we received in this last session authority to issue another $18.1 million of bond proceeds over this 06-07 biennium. For the unappropriated balance, the money that's now available yet to us in Prop 8 bonds that we have included in our legislative appropriation request in pink in this slide is $46.03 million. This general obligation bond program is complete, as you'll note in the far right-hand column, we expect to have implemented $69 million worth of statewide repairs over this eight-year period, which averages to a little over $8.5 million per year if you divide it over those eight calendar years. Prop 8, when it's said and done, will ultimately fund $12.3 million for the restoration of the San Jacinto Battleground, $12.5 million with the approval of the legislature for Battleship Texas. $350,000 was expended previously for the repairs at the Admiral Nimitz State Historic Site before that facility was transferred to the Texas Historical Commission. And then $2.6 million is earmarked still for the completion of the for the completion of the Sheldon Lake Learning Center. And then $4.1 million has been partially spent, and the balance earmarked
for the development of the Levi Jordan Plantation, a new historic site located near Houston. Our FYO3, or that original $36 million bond proceed that we received, has funded 141 separate projects. Most of those projects are now complete. We have expended or encumbered $35 million of that issue. And in a later slide, I'll share with you our anticipated completion day, when we expect to have that fully expended. With the FYO6 issue, we received the first issue of money, the first bond proceeds, this past April. Rather than issue bonds in this particular program in a lump sum number, a lump sum amount at the beginning of the fiscal year, bonds are going to be sold and issued to us throughout this biennium and into the next on an as-needed basis. The revenue from this $18 million issue is going to fund 45 projects, one of which is already complete. 11 are in design and 3 are in construction at the present time. All the balance of funds, I think it's important to recall, all the balance of funds that are unobligated right now are allocated to specific projects, to an approved list of projects. So we know and fully anticipate how we're going to expend those dollars. We are holding, however, in reserve, you notice at the bottom the note, about a little over $400,000 of these bond proceeds to be used for emergency repairs, just for unanticipated needs as the year goes on, and for increases to project costs as we incur those along the way. And then over time, those monies will be obligated and spent as project funds. Before moving on to our update this morning on specific capital projects, I thought it would be well worth our time to take a few moments, your time, to take a few moments to brief you on the project management process. This slide illustrates the steps that lead up to a capital project, and then the phases and the timeline that we typically encounter in implementing a capital project, a capital repair or construction project. We originally developed this slide 4 or 5 years ago for a commission presentation at the time, and we continue to refer back to it from time to time. We thought it would be helpful to show you once again this morning. As you well know, a project starts obviously with the appropriation authority from the legislature. We then, if you notice, the blue bullets are circled at the top. We then confirm our project priority needs, and then with your approval, we submit our bond request to the Texas Public Finance Authority, or TPFA, for their approval and subsequent sale and issue of the bond proceeds. Once we have those monies in hand, for the purpose of this slide, it's at this point that that the meter starts running for us, the clock starts ticking. Depending on the size and the complexity of the project, as you'll see in the boxes toward the bottom of the slide, it takes from 2 to 8 months to typically complete the planning, the scheduling, and selecting the design consultant for a project. On average, it takes the design consultant then, again, depending on the size of the project, from 2 to 8 months to design and prepare the plans and specifications for a project. Soliciting bids for construction and preparing and awarding a construction contract usually takes 3 to 4 months to comply with all the rules and regulations that we are required to comply with to make a project award or a construction award. Actual construction, as you well know, can last, again, depending on the size of the project, from 8 months to a year and a half to get completed. And then finally, the steps to close out a project can take 1 to 3 months. That's the time it takes to get the as-built drawings. We're not expending money, per se, during that period of time, but to get as-built drawings, to get final payments made to the contractor and clear and close those contracts. Again, and in summary then, depending on the size of the project, it takes a total of 18 to 38 months on average for us to complete a project and fully expend the project funds. The red line at the bottom kind of illustrates the point I made earlier. That illustrates kind of the expenditure curve that is typical with over the life of the project. We'll see a slight increase during the design phase where we'll spend money to pay for the design or the execution of the design of the project, but then the bulk of the money takes place in that last 18 to 20 months of the life of the project when we're in construction. So it's in the later stages of that project that really the monies are expended. I guess my primary intention for presenting this slide is just to emphasize the point that I think you all appreciate, is that projects don't start and stop over the two-year period between legislative sessions. We can't fully expend all the money that's appropriated to us by the legislature by the time the next legislature starts up again. It takes a real amount of time for us to successfully execute those projects. Just as an example, threw in a slide that reflects the actual encumbrance and expenditure of that $36.7 million that was issued in January of 2003. So we plotted both our encumbrance of the money, how we obligate the money toward projects, and then the actual expenditure in the red line below. With FY03 funds, we fully expect that we will encumber and obligate to a contract all the funds by April and then fully expend the money by the end of this fiscal year coming up in this August. We'll be at that point going into the next legislative session, having closed that bond program. So the implementation of the $36 million took a little over 4 years from the start, the time we started, to the time we anticipate having fully expended those revenues. Likewise, I think if we were to plot this new $18 million we got in FY06, because of the handful of large multi-million dollar projects that we're managing, we expect it's going to take another 3 years plus to fully execute and extend those projects. The last segment of my presentation this morning is to report on some specific capital projects. This slide actually is wanted to share with you is a picture of the recently completed education center at Gus Engeling Wildlife Management Area, a facility we're real proud of, a building that's being well used by wildlife as we speak. I'd first like to begin to answer some of the questions you raised at the beginning of the presentation and brief you on the status of our efforts to repair sites damaged by the Hurricane Rita and to recover federal reimbursement from FEMA. We are currently working very diligently to complete the repairs and obtain reimbursement for the costs for damage that we sustain right now at 9 project sites. That number, as you recall, or as Bob mentioned earlier, was originally 11. One of the sites is Lake Houston that we recently transferred to the city of Houston, so we're no longer pursuing repairs there. The 11th site is the wildlife management area site, Tony Houseman, WMA. That really sustained pretty minor damage, and as we got into the FEMA program, discovered that the anticipated cost of that repair was well below the threshold that FEMA determined eligible for reimbursement. So those repairs are made, and we've kind of taken it off our radar screen at this point. So there's 9 sites that remain, and as I mentioned earlier, only CDRAM at this point in time remains closed to the public. Our total estimated damages for those 9 sites totals $3.1 million. If we are ultimately determined eligible by FEMA and we can comply with all their long list of requirements, we can anticipate up to $2.8 million of reimbursement. This is about 90% of our costs. We got a long way to go before we get there, however. Our biggest struggle right now, the dilemma that we're trying to wrestle with here is that we've still not learned or been informed by FEMA what our insurance costs are going to be for these sites. They have determined that in order for us to be eligible for reimbursement at specific sites or certain sites affected by the hurricane, that we're going to have to provide proof of insurance, that we're going to have insurance in order to get coverage or reimbursement from FEMA. We have yet to learn from them or hear from them what specific sites those are and what level or what extent of insurance that is going to be required of us, so that we can then step back and evaluate, you know, the cost benefit of doing that and whether or not it would be in our best interest to secure that insurance to entitle us to the reimbursement. In the meantime, we're not leaving it at that. We have, under Bob's signature, submitted a letter to the Commissioner of Insurance, of the Texas Department of Insurance, requesting that he waive or exempt us from this insurance requirement. If we're successful with that and the Commissioner of Insurance grants us that exemption, then FEMA has indicated and has verified that they will waive that requirement, and then we'll be fully eligible for the full reimbursement. So it's been a long struggle. We're approaching it from several different angles, and hopefully we'll be successful with the Department of Insurance and get around this whole insurance requirement thing. We are hopeful that this will be resolved in the next few weeks. We're going to stay on top of it to the extent we can and get some answers.
Commissioner, I just inject here. We have a number of people working on this in the infrastructure division, law enforcement division. We have several claims there. Also, of course, one of the most frustrating things that we've been involved in. It's pretty bad. But, you know, when they came back to us after almost ten months, eleven months, and said, "Well, we think maybe you should be insured, but it's okay if you're retroactively insured." Right. I mean, we're not insured now, but it would be like if we went and got some insurance, it would be retroactive. And then they said, that's one of the kind of came out of maybe, you know,
the idea of the insurance insulates them from future costs.
Yeah.
They'll be willing to reimburse us for the past occurrence if we can demonstrate we have insurance that we won't come back.
Because you don't normally carry insurance.
No.
When it's in, you did not.
Is that insurance in perpetuity or just on an annual basis?
For the lifetime of the facility. Yes.
Yeah, they'll want you to keep guaranteeing that you'll keep paying premium.
Therefore, in the discussion that we got into with the Texas Department of Insurance and the director over there, after several back and forth with several of us, we're going to just get him to exempt us if he possibly can and move on.
I really chose not to get into all the ugly details of this negotiation or this struggle, you know, but FEMA's coming back to us and wanting us to insure picnic tables and insure, you know, storage buildings, you know, facilities of architecture that is not insurable.
The bottom line is here, we're proceeding with repairing and getting these sites back open, and we'll fight this battle.
On the subject of FEMA reimbursement, where are we on the reimbursement of law enforcement costs from Rita Katrina?
Actually, good news. Pete, if you want to join us, we got great news recently.
Mr. Cook, Commissioner Peter Flores, the Law Enforcement Director. We received $604,000 reimbursement from Katrina. That's already, the agency has received it, and it does come with the federal authority that we asked for. The additional $1.3 million for the Hurricane Rita event, we're on the final stages of that process as well. And that also will encompass expenses from the Wildlife Division and the Infrastructure Division. So we're very well on track there. So
total reimbursement of the two is 1.9, almost 2?
Yes, sir. Almost $2 million. Yes, sir.
Good. Something's moved along.
Next, as Mr. Cook introduced, I'd like to brief you a little bit about our successful completion of the $2.2 million renovation of the San Jacinto Monument. Since we last met in April, as Mr. Cook shared with you, we have completed that project. We celebrated the grand reopening of the elevator and the observation deck in September. This was funded with emergency funding from the last session and allowed us to make extensive repairs to the monument to comply with life safety codes and fire codes. Installed new fire suppression systems, fire alarms, fire hardened the elevator shaft, separated it from the stairwell, and made a lot of structural and internal infrastructure repairs to make that facility safe.
Go back to that slide, okay. Steve. It does give everybody an opportunity to understand the challenges to this battleground.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. By the way, that's not the battleship Texas.
No, it is.
That is the cultural landscape.
Yeah, right.
The San Jacinto Monument.
You're not on the typical tourist
roads.
Yeah. You know, that there have been a couple of accidental releases from plants out there where they had to use the monument to get inside the monument to let the fuse pass.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
As Phil says, it's an environmental shelter.
It's the green space of the fort.
This project is not a real photogenic project, so most of the work, most of the work was done, out of public view, above the ceilings and behind the walls and underground. But as I mentioned, part of the scope of the project was to fire harden or separate the elevator shaft. This is looking down the elevator shaft in the tower. A lot of work done in key areas of the shaft to provide that safety barrier. Big part of the project scope was the installation of this sprinkler system, which involved a lot of extensive piping that had introduced into the building to be able to provide that safety protection for the facility. The grand reopening event was hosted by the San Jacinto Museum of History Association. It was attended by Senator Gallegos and Representative Wayne Smith. Also want to thank Mr. Cook and Commissioner Parker for attending and for representing the department. A neat event that we held, and since that time we're back in business.
And the tireless work of 3 to 8.
Pardon me?
And the tireless work of 3 to 8.
Oh yeah, by all means. Yes, sir. I hope it goes without saying we are not giving up on our plans to secure funding for the long-term preservation of the battleship Texas. As you know, rather than continue to tow the ship, as we have discussed previously,
Rather than continue to tow the ship
for cyclical repairs every 10 to 12 years, we determined that it was in our best interest and for the long-term preservation purposes of the ship to try to create or develop a permanent driver, a cradle system on which the ship could sit out of water and be no longer subject to that corrosive environment. Our estimated total cost for this project, when it's all said and done, is estimated to be over $51 million. The dry berth alone, the cost to construct, to remove the ship, to do the dredging that's necessary, and build this dry berth is estimated at almost $24 million. The additional ship repairs that are now needed for the ship, once the ship is brought back in and set and it resides on the cradle, the remaining ship repairs is estimated a little over $27 million. That's to replace all the the structural repairs, to replace all the necessary ship steel hull, to do superstructure repairs, to repaint, to replace the wood deck on the ship, a big price tag for those repairs. The good news is that we do believe that after these expensive repairs are made, that the cost to maintain the ship, as long as it's out of water, will be manageable for us. In our long-term interest will be a doable thing. Bad news recently, I'm sure you all have been made aware, is that funding for the project that was to come from the $16 million of Federal Highway Enhancement Program funds, the STEP-P program, and the funds we made application for, that has been reviewed now by the Federal Highway Administration and determined to be ineligible. We are, however, working really closely with TxDOT. TxDOT has the lead at this point, and they have assured us they'll work with us to resubmit the application to the Federal Highway Administration to try to do whatever is necessary to hopefully persuade them to reevaluate or reconsider that determination. Indications from TxDOT is that there's a fair chance that that might happen. That's really unknown at this point in time. We're hoping to resolve that issue here shortly, or at least by the end of this calendar year, so we'll know or have a better idea of where we stand funding-wise.
Commissioner Parker, Chairman, before we get away from the battleship, Steve, there have been quite a lot of estimates on the battleship over the last few years. I saw one recently by an engineering firm called URS.
Correct.
Do you know about that one, and have you evaluated that?
No, sir, we have not, only briefly, that URS has approached us. We have met with URS. They shared with us the general scope of the approach that they would propose to take with that restoration. We have not had an opportunity to see in detail what that estimate is. And in fact, we did that on purpose because and met on several occasions with URS, because if we want to consider URS as a potential design consultant or constructor for this project, we really can't be meeting with them and conferring with them in advance. We don't want to jeopardize the competitive, and potentially disqualify them as a potential, vendor or resource to accomplish this work. So on the surface, we're interested, and it looks like a reasonable proposal. We're not familiar with enough with it at this point in time to know whether it has much validity or what.
And so the numbers that are on the screen are internally generated estimates.
That's it. Yes, sir. Internally generated. And our best estimate at this point in time to pursue the design solution that we presented to you in the past.
Without the benefit of a ship architect, engineer, etc.
And that would be the first step. Once we were able to obtain funding, we would turn this project over first to, to a naval architect, a marine engineer, to do the ultrasound, all the engineering and testing to first determine whether the ship is even structurally sound enough to be moved or to be or to sit on a cradle. And then they would engage with us to determine what the best solution would be and what that cost would be.
Is this, given the unique nature of this asset, is this or this liability really, is this project not suitable for design build of some sort of fashion, a modified design build?
Oh, certainly. Yeah. Oh, no, we will. We will consider, okay.
Seems like you have to work with so many details.
We're looking at construction manager at risk, a number of different project delivery methodologies that have been successful in the past that would, I think, help us.
I think it's going to be value engineering every time they turn around.
I agree completely with you. This project will not lend itself to the traditional approach we take to designing.
We're not doing that.
We factor that into these dollars.
Now, the additional funding outside of the Safe T grant, as you know, we have included in our legislative appropriation request appropriations for Prop 8 funds, as well as an additional appropriation of general revenue or whatever funding that the legislature might determine appropriate to enable us to fund this $51 million project, as well as we're counting on the support of the Battleship Texas Foundation and their fundraising efforts to help finance the cost of the project.
Once we, accomplish this with the funding, then what is your estimate on an annualized funding requirement going forward with the construction?
Excellent question, Commissioner Brown. We don't have those numbers yet, though. We are, not even currently engaged in doing that, but that is something that we understand that we're going to have to determine so that, we can confirm the viability of all of this. But I do not have those numbers at this time.
The last time I saw those numbers, which were buried back in the envelope, it looked like the interest fee would pretty much offset the running cost, but that assumed you spent an enormous amount of capital to bring them back up front.
But after that self-funding, right? And what you saw?
That was a year or so ago.
I suspect that was pure marginal operating cost and reserves either.
Of course, these aren't hard numbers either.
What's the visitor numbers?
The battleground has a really big number.
47,000 annually.
There's a separate fee that goes to battleship. And we didn't charge any fee for the battleground until this year, right? And it's a dollar. And there are about, 600,000 or 700,000 people a year that go on the battleground.
But then, not paying.
Not paying. No, it's a dollar a car, right?
Yeah.
It's a
dollar a
person. What's it cost to get on the ship?
Dollar a person.
The ship is $10.
$10 a person.
And what do you think it is, 47,000 getting on the ship?
I thought it was more than that, but maybe that's the paying for it.
My guess is whatever we estimate now in terms of operating costs is offset.
We have done some preliminary estimates, but I don't stock in those yet. Those really will need to be driven. Not to paint a gloomier picture, but
Can I ask the elephant in the room question? At what point do we reconsider display of ship and either portions of it that are salvaged or some limited replication? Because at some point, you might as well build a replica. I don't know where that number is either.
Or move it to where...
I just wonder, have we really done an analysis of alternatives, heretical though that may be, but these are bigger. These are going to be huge.
These are huge numbers.
There's some alternatives being looked at by local groups within that battleship friends group.
Yeah, the good news is, and there's not a lot of good news on this subject, but there are some battleships, not dreadnought class. This is a unique ship
there are those that, that have some pretty good visitorship numbers, but they're just, they're in a place where tourists, where you're in the tourist loop. Mm-hmm. And what would be the numbers on the Lexington? You have any idea? They're in the Corpus.
The numbers on what?
Lexington is in Corpus.
Corpus
part, of, part of the big tourist loop still in Corpus. And I guess that's one of the ideas being considered in the Houston area is to move it where the people are.
Right. But then the numbers are excessive. The numbers are large. They're big.
Well,
but you know, the Lexington.
You could increase, depending on something like that, you could increase visitation. But I don't think you're ever going to generate revenue from visitation to refurbish, refloat.
Oh no!
Not 50 million plus.
It's just not going to happen.
Right. Yeah.
But we are in constant communication with the Battleship Foundation folks and a lot of groups down there about that topic. This issue that where we are right now, I think, is actually in a very open position of going to the legislature and saying, you know, this is what it's going to cost to do what we believe is a long-term viable solution. It is costly, but some decision needs to be made here. And we have, in our action, have asked for the legislature to weigh in and to consider where we go from here. And, you know, we may be in a completely different mode, as we would say, come June 1 of 07. We may be looking at a lot of different alternatives. In the last 3 years, that battleship has, we woke up in the morning and found that battleship sitting at about 5 to 7 degree list. Go back in and pump it out and patch it up.
I'm glad Chairman Fitzsimmons brought up Lexington as an example. We are approaching a time when this ship will no longer, it'll reach a stage of decay or deterioration. Like the Lexington, it will no longer be able to be moved. It will be permanently residing where it sits right now in the mud, you know, or will sit. It will not be able to.
My only comment, I agree with Commissioner Montgomery. I mean, at some point you say enough is enough. You know, that's a lot of money, and it's amazing what we could do in state parks and other areas. And I'm not at all being insensitive to that, but you know, you reach a point where you say, you know, it just costs prohibitive. It's just not realistically reachable. And at that point, I think we need to go to a different plan.
$51 million
is just a ton of money.
Acquire, develop, and open 2 5,000-acre state parks.
With a little bit of change left over.
Yeah.
And then you wonder, and then again, you wonder, where do we get the biggest bang for the dollars? Where do we get the most exposure? Where do we get more people to reap benefits from it? So, you know, it's the economics here are tough.
It is a very difficult issue.
Yes.
We don't have the money to do it. The legislature is going to have to make a call.
Right. Are there any political champions for it in the legislature? Coming out of the Houston delegation?
Yeah, there are a couple. Yep.
Should we see?
Maybe not.
They don't know the numbers yet.
We discussed it at the LAR meeting.
Okay.
And finance, and they're aware.
So they're aware
that it's that.
But this is probably a minimum number.
That we're paid to a lot of other
finance. Yes. Okay.
That are on our list. Yes.
Commissioners, that concludes my presentation. Mr. Boone, I will get pictures of any lodge for you. I'll be happy to answer any other questions you might ask.
Any other questions? Okay. Thanks for that presentation. We'll now go to item number 3. Go back.
Thank you again, Commissioner Barker. Again, for the record, my name is Steve Whiston. I'm the Director of Infrastructure Division. As you recall, in the last legislative session, the legislature approved the appropriation freshwater fish stamp revenue to fund the debt service to issue $15 million of revenue bonds to construct a new East Texas fish hatchery to be located near Jasper. This agenda item, which I will present to you again tomorrow, requests your approval of a bond resolution that will be directed to the Texas Public Finance Authority to request that they proceed with the financing and sale of those revenue bonds. We need to set this process in motion now. The design of the new hatchery will be completed this coming spring in 2007, and we anticipate the start of construction of the hatchery next summer. So we need to get underway and get the process rolling with TPFA to provide the bond proceeds for this project. So with your concurrence tomorrow, or with your concurrence today, I will request tomorrow that you adopt the following motion: that the Texas Parks and Wildlife Commission adopts by resolution or Exhibit A, the resolution authorizing a request for the financing and execution and delivery of the documents required to effect such financing. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Any questions about
this? Board?
Well, yeah, $15 million may not be enough.
That is actually correct. $15 million.
That's a promise.
Phil, may we like to join in?
Yeah.
So where do you get the other 10?
Original estimate of available bond revenue. Our anticipated cost for the construction of this facility exceeds $15 million.
Mr. Chairman, Commissioner, I'm Phil DeRosa for the record, Director of Inland Fisheries. We're projecting a fairly significant increase in the cost from the original 2000 projection, and we are in the process right now, the staff and I are putting together a detailed description of what these increases are. We're preparing this for the legislature, and we'll send this around to the commission as soon as we've completed it. But the bottom line is the price has increased for two basic reasons. First, an increase in the scope of the original project, and second, inflation and increased construction costs that have occurred in the last 3 or 4 years. Basically, that's the two elements driving this. Back in the last legislative session, we asked the legislature for the authority to spend the $15 million in projected revenue from the stamp on the East Texas Fish Hatchery. We asked for $15 million because that's all that we projected was going to be in the fund by the end of this biennium. So we asked for authority to spend that $15 million. That $15 million then became the cost of the facility. But since we selected a site, because of the suitability of the site, and particularly in terms of long-term operating, what we can save in the long-term building this site, Mr. Cook and the staff and I and Scott and Gene, I've made a decision that it be the best interest of the agency and the best interest of the people of Texas that we build as big a facility here as we can on the site. So what's being drawn up now is a facility that is 30% larger than the original facility that the original price was put on. For instance, instead of a 50-acre fish hatchery, we are going to maximize the acres on that site, and we're going to build 65 acres. That's our hope right now at this time. So that's a 30% increase. So if you go back at the $15 million initial estimate and add 30% to it, you're up to $19 million in $2,000 from the original projection of the project. And if you conservatively say that prices, the cost of construction has increased 35% in the last 5 or 6 years. That's a real conservative estimate. It's not hard to see how the price of this thing has increased. So from that original projection in 2000, and that's where we are. And I need to say, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
We're in the design phase right now. It's hard for us to actually put a real accurate number on this until we get some plans and we can start working on them and cutting things out and maybe reducing the scope somewhat from what our hopes were. But that's going to be driven by the cost. The bonds actually, you know, when we were, the legislature required us to issue these bonds, there was a lot of consternation from anglers and people about why we're doing this, why aren't we spending the cash. I think when we sit back and look at it now, at the position that we're in, it's actually a good deal for us. Because without this bond, without the $15 million bond, it would probably be 2 to 3 years down the road before we'd have enough revenue to construct, to start construction without this bond. The rest of the money is, we're asking at this legislative session, the authority to spend the rest of the money that's in that account right now on top of the $15 million, and that'll get us to where we need to be. We're not asking for any new money. We're just asking for the authority to spend that money. What we have concluded, and I think I told you this last time, is that the interest we're going to pay on the bonds is going to be cheaper for us in the long run than accruing these increased construction costs. I mean, what's happened in the last several years since the hurricane's been unbelievable, and we want to get the project started. At the state agency, we can't issue a contract for construction until the money's in the bank. So what the $15 million bond allow us to make sure we have enough money in the bank next summer to be able to issue a contract to tie these numbers down. So
tell them how many dollars worth of fishing stands.
We estimated initially that we would generate about $5 million a year on the freshwater stamp, and the first 3 years we generated about $6.2 million. So we're doing better than we expected.
Per year.
Does the expansion of scope allow you to reduce any of the other obsolescence expenditures that were planned in our original forecast that we looked at? There's originally a 10-year forecast of building a new one and upgrading
some other facilities.
Are any of those going to be decommissioned, or are we going to keep everything out there and just build a big one now?
You know, we have a priority list, and we're going to go down that list and get as far as we can. You know, and that's one of the reasons that this is, I think the bonding is a good thing right at this point in time, because it allows us to take any surplus we have in that account and start a new project and get a contract on working on something else that we were going to do and get that tied down, get those costs tied down as quickly as we can. So I think it's a good business decision that was made.
Can you explain real briefly how the capacity and productivity issues measured with a fish hatchery? Because the 30% more surface area mean 30% more production? Just to explain that further, because that was a direct question at the Senate Finance Committee of just how you measure productivity.
The limiting factor in production of fish is pond space. I mean, you can raise so many fish per acre of pond. No matter how efficient you are, you reach a point where you can only raise so many fish per acre of water. So to increase production, you increase acreage. And that's what we're projecting to do. That's what we're hoping to increase from 50 acres of ponds to 65 acres of ponds, which is all we can put on the site. I mean, we plan to maximize.
So you build it to capacity.
Build it to capacity to the site.
All right. And will you do it when you flesh out the answers to these questions for the legislature, will you show a comparison of what it would cost to replace that capacity from scratch, in other words, building a new hatchery for that?
We'll certainly do that.
Down the road? Because I think that's the nub of it. I mean, we can eliminate that and reduce this cost overrun, as some people are referring to it. But down the road, you're going to have to do this.
Yeah. You know, one of the biggest, the reason this site is we like the site, there were lots of good sites that we had an option of picking. This site, we felt, was the best site, and you all heard this, is because the biggest cost we have on fish hatcheries is pumping water to the site. Most places we're pumping water uphill to a storage reservoir, then it comes back into the... We have the option here in this site of a fairly substantial amount of time being able to use a siphon, where all we need to is a little pumping to start the siphon, and the water is going to gravity flow to the hatchery. So our operating costs will be reduced significantly every year. So that's why we decided in the long term, this is would be the best thing for the people, best for the state of Texas, to maximize this site, the use of this site.
You may have an opportunity to respond to the question of could you phase the additional 15 acres of ponds, and if so, how would that work? One, is it feasible physically in the way you construct it, and two, is there some incremental cost in phasing over and above completing it all now? And the additional question is the additional capacity in fish production of that 15 acres, is it needed now? I mean, if I were sitting there, I'd probably ask you that.
Let me just say that we have the people that are working on the design team that we've contracted with. We have told them to give us all the options, because the way costs are going now, you know, we don't know what's going to happen. We said, you know, let's go back with the basic facility that we initially started with, and then everything else after that is an add-on, as an optional bid. Something to bid on. We're going to see how all those things work out, and we're going to try to get the best deal we can. But we're going to address all, we can certainly address all the areas of increased production and those type of things.
But do we need the additional production that would be provided by the 50 acres?
Yeah. It's not going to get us to where we can meet 100% of the needs. You know, a lot of people ask questions about why we need to stock fish in Texas anyway. You know, why can't that? We're at a point where my projection is we're going to need more fish and not fewer, because of all the needs for water now and all the people accessing water. Our reservoirs are fluctuating very seriously, and that has a tremendous impact on fish production, on natural fish production. So we're going to maintain the quality of the fishing we have now in Texas with everything else that's happening to the demands for water. We're going to need to supplement Mother Nature, I think, even more to maintain what we have.
I think that's a powerful argument that you want to develop for this incremental 15 acres.
Will we have a sense of total scope and cost?
By the summer. They should have something to begin chewing on in the summer. But the costs are, you know, the costs are just jumping up and down, and I'm not, you know, we may reach a point next summer where the cost actually began to decline if things settle a bit. Not the level.
Percentage growth slow down.
Yeah. Yes,
sir. And I don't know, in follow-up to Ned's question, and that is, based on the current production, if we were to build it to that capacity, how much more fish would we have that we don't have now? In other words, what is the projected incremental?
We produce anywhere, let's just use Florida bass. We produce anywhere from 100,000 to 150,000 fingerlings per acre of production pond. So 15 more acres would give us 1.5 million to 2 million more fish every year. Of bass during that.
Yes, but taking our production today in comparison to the future production, how much more? In other words, are we going to double, triple,
quadruple? Yeah. You're talking about the old Jasper Fish Hatchery.
What we're producing today versus what we would produce in 2 years?
Right now we're producing anywhere from 6 to 7 million fingerlings a year, and the projection is when this new facility is done, and these guys are going to change back here. I'm projecting anywhere from 10 to 11 million.
So we're doubling.
30%.
Yeah, about 4 million.
Because right now the Jasper facility is a fairly large facility, but it's not efficient. We produce about 1.5 million, 2 million fish there a year. When you have 65 acres, you figure 100,000 an acre, that's 600, that's 6.5 million, which is an increase of 4.5 million over what we do now at the current site.
Is
that
total
net
reduction?
6 to 7 million.
Now.
Did you have demand for that?
Oh, absolutely. We have demand for 10, 11 million.
Right now.
Yeah.
I think that's an important part of the
presentation. Yes.
Good point. What sort of escalation do you see in demand on an annual basis?
That's pretty hard to project. Right now, you know, the requests for fish come in from the field biologists. Survey the lakes, and they make the request for fish. And we're pretty stringent on what we allow them to submit as a request. We need to make sure that the needs are there. I'm not saying, the point is, some of the requests that they're making that we're not currently allowing are probably very valid. So it'd be hard to make that projection now, but we look at that all the time. We know what our need is. You know, we went through a point in time where we wouldn't let them request any more than we were producing.
Yeah.
And that's not how we're going to say it.
No.
We need to know what we really need.
Absolutely.
You know, in the older days, we used to be able to get fish from the state for private lakes many years ago. Do we anticipate at any given point in the future that we might be able to raise our production to where there be a surplus and we may be able to sell or otherwise stock private lakes, or that's just not realistic?
I would hope not. There's been a tremendous private aquaculture industry that's developed in Texas to meet that need. So we want to let them meet that need, and we'll take care of the public water, just like we don't want them coming in our business. I think things are working well right now the way they are.
Yeah, I was going to ask a question about privatizing. I mean, is there any thought process to privatize it and find somebody to produce this on a contractual basis for us so we don't have to come up with $20, $30 million?
We look at that almost every legislative session. That question comes up, and in terms of quality and reliability, there's just that capacity is not out there right now, not even close.
No, I understand. It's not
in terms
there now,
of the sport fish like bass and other things, now catfish, that capacity is probably there.
Yeah, because catfish farming.
Because I mean, it's a big industry.
No states, nobody's doing it that way. Has anybody ever tried it that way relative to the state contracting with a private contractor to supply so many fish per year?
I'm not aware of any, but I'm not going to say that. I'll certainly look into it.
You know, Pete, one of the big factors of this increased production was the savings on the energy costs. Pump that water uphill, placing the hatchery where we did, and he spoke about siphoning. That's going to be about $15,000 to $18,000 per month savings of energy costs.
On the months we don't have to pump.
Right. On the months we don't have to pump, we're going to be saving $15,000 to $18,000. And that translates into how many fish? Bill, you told me once.
Ooh, I don't remember.
I think you said about 300. Any other questions? If not, we'll place this item on the meeting and end the public comment and action. I think this committee has completed its business. We'll move on to the regulations committee. Pass the gavel to Chairman Friedkin.
Don't throw it. There you go. Why don't we reconvene the conservation committee?
Yes. Reconvene and then go for
it. Reconvene the conservation committee and go into
go upstairs.
Okay, we will now recess for executive session. Therefore, I'd like to announce that pursuant to requirements of Chapter 551, Government Code refers to the Open Meetings Act, an executive session will be held at this time for the purpose of deliberation on real estate matters under Section 551.072 of the Texas Open Meetings Act, and the purpose of discussing pending litigation, and the purpose of seeking legal advice from General Counsel under Section 551.071 of the Open Meetings Act. We're recessed in the executive session. The regular Conservation Committee, item number 7, proposed land sale, Travis County, Austin, Gilmore, and Academy property, Ted Hollingsworth, you're on.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Ted Hollingsworth with the Land Conservation Program. I'm here to update you on an inquiry we've had regarding the sale of the Austin Gay Morton Academy. It is from another public entity. Funds from the sale of the Gay Morton Academy would be used to develop the Powell Ranch Gay Morton Academy in Hamilton County. The subject tract is 4.2 acres. It is not serving our Gay Mortons as it should be because of its small size and location. It is on 50th Street in town. It is adjacent to the University of Texas campus. Staff would like to proceed to negotiate with this other public entity on the following terms: that the sale would be at or above appraised values, that Parks and Wildlife would have the option of leasing the property back for 3 years to facilitate our transition into the new academy facilities, and that at least $700,000 of the sale proceeds is authorized for use to develop the new Game Warden Academy. Staff is requesting authority to proceed, finalize that contract. If the contract is finalized, to the satisfaction of the executive director, to post public notice, solicit public comment, and return to you at a future commission meeting to request that you give us the green light to close on the transaction.
Thank you, Ted. Any questions or discussion? No questions or discussion. I'd like to ask staff to begin the public notice and input process. Any other business before the Conservation Committee?
Okay.
I'll yield the floor.